Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, Tommy, in this podcast, we're going to be looking into the future, but not that far into the future, because we are knocking on the door of 2022.
That's right, yes, and in this video, we are going to discuss the cars worth waiting for 2022.
So welcome to TFL Talk, where if you follow our YouTube channels, you know that I am Roman.
And I am Tommy, and we talk and bicker about cars on this podcast.
And we're father and son. And if you like what we do on video, hopefully you like what we do here on the podcast, because we get to dive deep on the podcast because, well, we have a lot more time than we do on YouTube. And by the way, guys, if you are fans of TFL or if you're not, head on over to tfl-studios.com where you can get all of our podcasts, videos, and website news and add them to your phone. Oh, look at that. You and Blaze are my screensaver on my phone, Tommy. Check it out. See?
That's great.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys can go over there and download it as a little web app and keep up to date. But, Tommy, before we get to the new cool cars that are coming, like the new Integra, the new Z, the new Raptor Bronco. Did you see how I said that?
Yep.
If we had reverb, it'd be really cool.
Okay.
Do we have reverb? We don't have reverb.
No, we no reverb.
Oh, no reverb. Okay, never mind. Before we get to that, let's talk about the car market because, you know, one of the things that we really try to do is keep our finger on what's happening in the car world. And this is the weirdest time I have ever lived through. Can I explain that?
Yeah, go for it.
I have never seen so many unhappy, dare I say, miserable car buyers, and yet so many dealers that are making record profits and car companies that are making record profits. It's the weirdest thing. As far as I could tell, very few people are happy with the current car situation in terms of customers, right? And yet car companies, car dealers, individuals like let's say RJ from Rivian, who just made $1 billion by building 100 Rivians, are over the moon, and yet the rest of us are either tapping out of the car market or are struggling with 10-year loans on overpriced, in my opinion at least, vehicles that aren't worth, you know, the money that the dealerships and the manufacturers are asking for them. It's just the craziest time. And then there's other things like, well, I don't know, you know, I've been lucky enough to be invited to go on a lot of Porsche events recently, so thank you, Porsche. And because of that, I've been kind of poking around on Porsche's website. Not that we're buying Porsches, but I've just been kind of having fun with it. And like on the Porsche website, you can't get any sports car right now, Tommy. You can't get a 911, you can't get a Cayman, you can't get a Boxster. These are completely unobtainium. The only cars that are available are Cayennes, Macans, and maybe a Taycan. It's the weirdest time.
Yep, and then we're also looking at, you know, crazy markups in a lot of cases of a few thousand dollars ranging anywhere.
So true.
To 10,000, even 20. In some cases for like G-Wagons, $100,000 markup. So it's
300,000 markup in the case of some high-end Mercedes sports cars.
It's a very difficult time to buy anything.
So where does this end? How does this end? When you've got a customer base that is either unhappy or unsatisfied or just tapping out of the market, and yet you have this kind of, you know, complete, I would say, dysfunction in the market, the way that it works with manufacturers and dealers making record profit. Where does this go?
Well, I think that the solution is we have to get caught up with the supply in relation to the demand. And then from there, I'm hoping at some point it's going to go back to the way it was before the chip shortage, where there's inventory on lots, there's money on the hood, and there are discounts available.
Yeah, let's talk about how we got in this situation. Obviously, you know, we're having a worldwide pandemic, which, you know, doesn't help the situation. But, you know, everybody's pointing their finger at the chip shortage. And Andre just recently did a story, which got a lot of attention, where GM has parked something like 5,000 Silverados at a former factory where they used to build chips.
That's
irony
crazy.
Of ironies. Why aren't the manufacturers building their own chips?
Well, I think it's an incredibly difficult venture to start your own chip manufacturing. And I think that the manufacturers think, we know we are good at assembling vehicles, but it's not our place to be building the little individual pieces that go into the vehicles.
Well, dare I say it, that maybe they've gotten away from the root of what their business is, and that is actually not assembling vehicles, but building vehicles, right? Actually building all the components to a vehicle, and that includes things like brakes, transmissions, power plants, right? Maybe the supply chain issue that we're seeing is because the manufacturers no longer control their own supply chain because they're not building the components that make up the vehicle. Like you said, maybe the problem is that manufacturers are no longer manufacturing, but assembling.
Well, I mean, I would argue that perhaps the manufacturers have never been in the market of forging their own materials.
I think when, like, Henry Ford started the first Model T, everything in the Model T was Ford, including the wheels.
But even like carburetors?
I think so. I think everything in that car was a Ford, except for the tire, which was like, what, his friend Firestone, right?
Sure.
Tires were always different.
But then when cars got more complicated, right, and they started getting more equipment in them and more technology, I don't think it's fair to say that every manufacturer has always manufactured every component, even in the 50s and 60s, right? I mean, a lot of vehicles would have radios built by Becker. For example, my Mercedes, 1980s Mercedes had a Becker radio in it, right?
Right, but there are like accessories, right, which I would consider a radio, that or, you know, tires, which I understand, but then there are essential parts of a car, like transmissions, which are also being outsourced, or brakes. Every performance car I see now has Brembos. Everyone, literally. I'm not saying Brembos are bad, but I'm saying there's now one company that controls the entire, you know, brake supply in the entire world. What happens if, like, Godzilla steps on the Brembo factory? Does that mean all cars now are going to be in trouble because manufacturers can't get Brembos?
No, because there's other competitors in that world.
But I'm saying if you look at all performance cars, they all have Brembos. And motorcycles, you know, it goes far beyond cars. It seems like Brembo has taken over the brake world, at least in the performance world. Sure, if you don't have performance brakes, they're probably still not. But all performance cars seem now to be Brembos. Just as the same thing is happening with shocks, right? Once upon a time, there were manufacturers who built their own shocks. Now you look at all the performance shocks, and they're all either Fox or Bilstein or, you know, Multimatic.
But I think what you'll find is that even if you took like a Ford branded shock or a GM branding shock, and you actually, you know, followed the money and figured out where it was manufactured, it wasn't Ford or GM. I mean, I'm looking at Wikipedia right now because I was curious. If we look at like transmissions, ZF is one of the largest suppliers of transmissions. They've been doing transmissions for vehicles in the auto industry since 1929. So this has not been a recent thing where manufacturers don't build their own transmissions. It's a long and enriched world of globalization and parts supplying.
And actually, in some ways, it's worse with electric cars, because with electric cars, and those are coming, guys, whether you like it or not, the batteries are either built by Panasonic or LG, pretty much. That's where most batteries come from. And outside of Tesla, which is actually trying to control their own supply chain, right? Tesla's trying to actually build their own motors. A lot of the electric motors are not built by the manufacturers. That's not true with Ford. I think Ford builds their Mach-E motors, and I want to say Chevy built the. I could be wrong.
I think Chevrolet. Yeah, but if you look at like the battery plants, for example, this is a good example. So the chemistry, right? The goop that's within the battery is licensed from LG or Panasonic. So they always say in collaboration with. But the companies have their own battery manufacturing plants. So the OEMs actually build their own batteries, but the licensing and the chemistry has to come from Panasonic or LG.
Yeah, basically they control the supply because they can pull that license and you're...
Right, you're stuck.
You're stuck. You're not building any batteries. I mean, if what you're saying is that LG and Panasonic own the recipe, and the manufacturers, while they're, you know, making their own stew, still have to depend on those two companies for the recipe, then, you know, they're also going to be in trouble if at some point, you know, LG or Panasonic decide that they no longer want to share the recipe. I kind of feel like you could have seen this coming a long way away because of, you know, the supply chain and how complicated it has become to build a car nowadays, where if, you know, think about it, if you don't have a door handle, you can't sell the car or truck.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. But I also think it's important to realize that this is not like a recent occurrence, that the manufacturers have been severely globalized for many, many, many decades. And I think it's unrealistic to expect them to build every component on the vehicle and still make that profitable. And then you've got vehicles like the G-Wagon that aren't even manufactured by Mercedes at all, right? The G-Wagon's manufactured by Magna. Same thing with the Supra.
Yeah.
Same kind of deal. So I wouldn't expect a manufacturer to be like, all right, we're building everything from the headlight bulbs to the lug nuts to the wheels to the fuel injectors.
So the G-Wagon's a good example. I think probably a Porsche is a good example as well of these highly desirable cars where like a GT3, right? Like a Porsche GT3. If you can get an allocation for a GT3, and actually Bronco as well, probably maybe the Hummer EV, right? If you can get one of these, you could flip it tomorrow for $50,000 more easily, like that, right? So does that mean that the car, based on, you know, the market, is underpriced? I mean, are we saying that a Bronco is worth, like our first edition Bronco, I was just talking to a local Ford dealer, and he would buy it immediately for $10,000 over. And that's not our business. We're not in the business of flipping cars. So, you know, obviously we have no interest in that. But I've seen them online for as much as $100,000. So does that mean that Ford has underpriced the Bronco by $40,000 or $30,000?
That's a good question.
And is Porsche underpriced a GT3? And has, you know, Mercedes underpriced a G-Wagon? Because obviously they're leaving a lot of money on the table if the car is worth, let's say, $50,000 to $100,000 more than the manufacturer is asking for. Hmm. And, you know, where does that leave us, you know, who barely can afford the current MSRPs? Does that mean that only the rich and super rich will be able to get these cars? Will it be like Ferrari, where, you know, you're going to have to know somebody, or you're going to have to, you know, bribe somebody, or you're going to have to, you know, be in the know to be able to get some of these cars? I mean, that's already happening with a lot of these very expensive vehicles. Is that going to filter its way down to, like, you know, the Camrys of the world?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I'm sorry.
None of it is good, dude.
None of it is good.
None of it is good. So I don't know where, you know, I don't know where this ends up. Anyway, speaking of like highly desirable cars that are coming next year, let's talk about the 2022 cars that we are looking forward to driving. And let's start with the one that came out this week. There's a couple that came out this week, but the one that I'm probably the most excited about is the Bronco Raptor. So Ford published some pictures on their marketing website, Bronco Nation. And by the way, you know, we like to be very transparent and clear. Make no mistake, Bronco Nation is a Ford marketing exercise. It is not an independent nation of auto enthusiasts. It is something that Ford has created to help market and sell Ford products, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying, don't be fooled into thinking it's like, you know, some consumer-oriented site. And anyway, so obviously they published the first images, and I hate to say this, Tommy, but I'm not sure it's as lustworthy as I was hoping for it to be. The fenders are really wide. The thing is super jacked up. You know, we're guessing at the power plant, so we're looking probably at that EcoBoost power plant that's in the Raptor right now. So, you know, 450-ish horsepower from a twin-turbo V6. It may be like, maybe, you know, and I hate to say this, but it may be like almost too much. I mean, I'm so happy with the first edition that we have, right, with the regular 3.5, 320 horsepower. I think it's just fine. I don't know if you need to go 450 on a Bronco, but I guess if you want to compete with the Jeep 392.
Okay, so why is it on the list if you're not excited about it?
Well, I'm not. I'm saying I think people will be excited about it, but I'm saying personally, I'm not sure. Sure. How about you? Are you? What do you think of it?
Yeah, it's a factory vehicle in 37s. How can you not be excited about it? I mean, this is a top dog Bronco, which is already off the wall craziness enough with the 35s. The sixth generation Bronco has been a monstrous success from Ford, at least in terms of a buzz standpoint. And when you put the Raptor name on it, I think that people are just going to go berserk for it.
Well, so I guess maybe actually now that you've made me think about it, maybe the reason I'm a little less thrilled is the Jeep came with a V8, right? And there was something about slamming a big old Hemi V8 into a Wrangler, which made it sound cool and just badass. And if all indications are correct, this is not going to have a V8. It's going to have that 3.5 liter that's in the current Raptor. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting too old, but there's just something about a V8 that puts a huge smile on my face. And I know if I were to not be able to hear it and, you know, not be able to know what's under the hood performance-wise, you couldn't probably tell the difference. And in some ways, the V6 twin turbo might be a better performer, certainly better fuel economy potentially. But, I think if it had a V8, I'd be much more over the moon about it.
Would you prefer a crank start on the front of it too? maybe a knob to adjust the fuel mixture in the engine and the timing.
Yeah,
it's 2021. I think that the whole V8 craze, Dad, is very 1970s way of looking at it.
Okay, let me rephrase it. I would be much more excited if it was completely electric. How about that?
There you go. That's a little better.
Because I'm excited about, you know, I got to drive the Hummer EV, and I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I don't think that the V8 is going to be a huge problem in this vehicle. Especially, I mean, you live at 5,000 feet above sea level. A twin-turbo EcoBoost F-150 will outperform a 5-liter F-150 all day of the week.
The other thing about the Bronco is I really love the styling of the Bronco, and I think with 35s, it just looks really kind of rough and tough and kind of butch and manly and everything I want in an off-roader. But I think with 37s and those, like those side fenders are, like, literally 15 inches long. It just feels like it feels like they went, you know, to the aftermarket and pick the gaudiest, most over the top look
flares,
for the that they could, and it's not, doesn't look factory. It looks like hey, we need to compete with the Jeep, so let's slam this thing together, and let's use the current Bronco, which was never designed to have 37s, but let's make it work because we're the manufacturer and they made it work. I'm not saying they didn't make it work, but it just looks a little too kind of Humpty Dumpty-ish.
Well, the first thing I'll say is you bet your butt this thing was designed for 37s, especially if they...
No, the original Bronco wasn't.
The current one?
Yeah.
No, I think it was. I think from the get-go, Ford knew exactly what their plan was for release. I think they knew right off the bat we're going to do the standard one and the Sasquatch. We're going to let those generate buzz, and then we're going to do the...
See, I think...
These manufacturers are very careful about their long-term planning, Dad.
See, I don't agree. You know why I don't agree with that?
Why is that?
I think Ford was completely blindsided by the TRX.
The TRX they were blindsided with?
Yeah.
But I think they knew that, and they weren't going to make the same mistake on the Bronco.
And I think they were blindsided by the 392. So I think that this is a reaction to the 392.
I don't think they were blindsided. I think they knew exactly what the 392 was.
I think that the 392 was a reaction to the Bronco, and then... The Bronco Raptor is a reaction to the 392.
The issue, though, with saying that is that these companies move so incredibly slowly. I don't think that Ford could have put this together in the time since the 392 is at the market.
Also, all these guys in Detroit, like, you know each other.
Yeah, exactly. There's no secrets to be held from any of these manufacturers. They're all having dinner and drinks and stuff.
They all have the same schools.
So they all know exactly what's going on. So to say that they were blindsided, I think, is a little presumptuous.
That doesn't mean that the higher-ups are, you know, while the engineers
you don't think
know
they tell their boss? They definitely tell their boss.
I'm
100%.
I'm not sure the guys...
1,000%. The bosses are having dinners together, too.
I'm not sure that the guys in Paris or wherever the heck Peugeot is headquartered know what's going on, in Moab when the two teams are there, you know, testing their respective vehicles, which is where they're, you know,
so here's what
I
think happened. I think that this was in the plan all along, the Bronco Raptor. I really do. Right from the get-go, Ford knew that they were going to do a Raptor version. Because they did a Raptor version of the F-150, and look how much it's taken off. I think what happened is they knew they wanted to do
why was that rumor about the Warthog out there?
Because they wanted... I think the name was probably changed. I do think that the name has changed. But I think the product itself was...
You think it was a Warthog originally?
Yeah, I think that probably it was. Or maybe that was the internal code. You know, all these cars have these funky internal codes, and I think maybe the internal code for the Raptor was the Warthog. But here's, so I think what happened with the fender flares, which do look a little goofy, I agree, is that they knew they wanted to do a wide body version, but they didn't have the budget to extend the sheet metal. So instead of extending the sheet metal, they extended the plastic arches.
Look, I know I'm pissing into the wind when I'm, you know, talking about the fact that maybe the Bronco Raptor isn't the greatest thing since sliced bread. I get that. I know our audience. But at the same time, I'm going to be honest here. I think the one that we have is perfect. And for the first, maybe I'm getting old. I don't know. For the first time in my life, I kind of feel like the one we have is just right. And for 99% of the people who are going to use that thing on road, you really are compromising yourself by going down. If you're going to off-road it, hell yeah, go get yourself the Raptor. But 99% of people aren't going to, right? They're going to park it at the local Safeway or whatever your grocery store is. And at that point, it's going to be such a compromised vehicle on road that it's just silly. It's like, it'd be like driving a Formula One car around. It'd be fast and it'd be quick, but God, will it be miserable.
And get off my lawn.
No, it's true, Tommy.
No, it isn't true. It's not true at all. Look at all the people that are driving around the Wranglers every day on 37s and 40s. And those are vehicles with solid axles and sketchy lifts.
Hey, I love the TRX, but you just took it to Moab. How much was it to fill up? How much did it cost to put a half a tank of gas in that thing?
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
Exactly. Like that's what compromised on road. Exactly.
But here's the deal. I actually think that Jeep kind of missed the mark on the 392.
Really?
I do.
Oh, now you're going after the Jeep. Oh, my God.
I do.
We're going to get so much hate.
No, I do because, they put the big V8 in it, but they didn't do any of the extra flair that you need when you put a big V8 in it. They didn't give it a crazy paint job or a crazy fender flare or like an insane lift or all of this.
You wanted to see like a Hot Wheels
Yes, I wanted to see something nuts. And the issue is that it's not a better rock crawler than a Rubicon. It's not really a better desert runner than the Rubicon because it still is a narrow body Wrangler. What Ford has done right with the Raptor and what the Raptor has always been really good
at. Raptor Bronco, let's be clear.
No, Raptor F-150.
Oh, Raptor F-150.
Raptor everything is that the Raptor is not a rock crawler. It's not a water forder. It's not a mudder. It's always been a desert runner. It's about going as fast as you can through the sand, rooster tails flying, jumping over dunes, and that's what they did right with the Bronco Raptor, is that this doesn't scream, let's go tootle along some rock, it screams, let's go hit the desert.
I don't know, I respect your opinion, but I think they did the most important thing, which was stuff a big old V8 under the hood of that thing, which is what their customers wanted.
Yeah, but the customers want, the issue is...
Ford is doing what they want. Or they think that, whatever corporate wants. Ford is not doing what their customers want. Everybody, since the beginning of the last generation, two generations ago, Raptor has always wanted a big old V8. And they've walked away from it. And they are walking away from it.
Right. But times are moving on. I mean, we've got corporate fuel economy standards. I don't think we can expect everything to have a V8 for.
I'm just saying, FCA is really good at giving their customers what they want, whether it's a Hellcat, everything,
sure.
Right?
But I think that customers want a Bronco Raptor. I really do. Okay. And I like the 392, but let's be honest. Everybody says they want the ultimate sleeper, and then you go and have to write that $85,000 check, and you better bet you want your neighbors to know you're owed an $85,000 check. That thing should have side pipes. It should have 37s. It should have a giant supercharger coming out of the hood. It should just be ridiculous, the 392 Wrangler, and it just isn't ridiculous enough.
And here's a little asterisk. We understand that the Raptor R is coming, which is rumored to have the GT500.
There you go. Pretty cool.
V8, we know that, so don't scream it at the podcast or the video. And we also know that it has not been confirmed that the Raptor Bronco won't have a V8, but we're pretty sure it's going to have Raptors twin-turbo.
Although, Ford did come out with a desert racer truck.
That had a V8, yeah.
Right, at the Baja truck,
right,
which
you can
buy.
It's a pure on desert. It's like a Copo Camaro.
It's a caged race car.
Yeah, it's a pure. If you're going to go race Baja, that's the one to get.
All right, so what's the next vehicle on our list?
Let's go with the one that I'm pretty excited about, and you're not, but of course that is the new Z.
I'm not unexcited about the new Z.
Well, I think what happened, I'm a Z guy. I've owned, my dad, your grandpa owned Z. We've owned like three or four of them. And unfortunately what happened is in the time that you've been around, right, which is like the last 25 years, the Z has not been the standard for Nissan. It's been the GTR. And so the 350, let's face it, wasn't all that grand. The 370 wasn't all that grand. So you weren't around when the original Z came out or when the 300 twin turbo came out, which was a good car. I'm not going to say the 280 was a great car. That was more of a grand tour. So I think that the new Z harkens back The Z of old. Looks like it's going to have 400 horsepower. The styling is retro and yet modern at the same time. I got to sit in it at the Chicago Auto Show, did a video with it, and I thought they did a really good job. You know, proof's in the pudding. We haven't driven it yet. I would have loved it to be all electric. I think they would have smashed it out of the park if they had made it all electric, but they didn't. But at least there's life in Nissan, and they're finally, you know, bringing back a vehicle where there's a huge following, you know, not as huge as a Vette, let's say, or a Mustang, but certainly in the you know, Japanese car community, the Z carries a big torch in a lot of people's hearts.
I do think that the Z is a really good piece of design. I think that it's finally, you know, or the return of a Nikon, but I'm not super sure that they went. I mean, I think that they did a really good job of modernizing it with the turbocharged engine, and I'm really happy it still has a manual transmission. But I do wish that they had kind of maybe pushed the needle with some electrification or something to really make it stand out among not just Z fans, but like someone who's looking at buying a Mustang or a Mustang Mach-E or a performance car like that.
Yeah, fair enough. But I'm super excited. I think. Every time, you know, we do a video on it, I think the people, you guys out there, also appreciate what Nissan is trying to do. Yeah, I can't wait to get behind the wheel and actually drive it. I just worry. Nissan has been struggling recently. I'll give you an example. The electric car, right, the Ari, is it the Ariya?
Mm-hmm.
That came out, what is it now, like 3 years ago? And Nissan, just some, I think, you know, word of advice from an automotive journalist, you should hit the market like a year ago. And it still is, you know, sitting at auto shows and not a dealer lot. And I think you're missing the boat. The every day that you wait to roll that thing out is a day you're falling farther behind, or Nissan is falling farther behind in the electric vehicle game.
Hmm.
So anyway, should we keep going?
Yeah, let's keep going.
Let's talk about the one that's up there that just came out yesterday. The new, if we had reverb, I could make it sound cool, Acura Integra.
Right. Yeah. So not.
You know, your mom had an Integra.
I did know that. Huh? Yep. So not a whole ton of detailed information.
No, it's a styling thing.
On the Integra. But what we do know is that it's heavily related to the Honda Civic Si, which is not uncommon for the Integras of the past. Now, if you notice, like, the current generation or the upcoming Si is not available, I think, in a five-door hatch, if I remember right. So that's where the Integra comes in, where you can of course, get the Si 1.5-liter turbocharged engine and a six-speed manual and front-wheel drive, but you're also going to have some additional practicality that you might not be able to get on the Honda.
Look, Alex was out there yesterday where it was unveiled, and every time a new car gets unveiled, very rarely are the comments positive. Everybody seems to always like to be very critical about it, and so the "you say what" comments have been, a lukewarm replacement for the ILX, or
it looks like a TLX,
or a phoned-in Honda SI. Version of an Acura, or an Acura version of a phone. And I think it could be like a baby TLX. I think the TLX is one of Acura's best designs right now. We had it at the office, and every time I walked by it, I did a double take. It was that good looking. It was everything you want a sporty vehicle to be. And this looks like kind of a smaller baby version of it. So I'm hoping that, it turns out to be that way once you get behind the wheel.
So it's only available as a five-door hatchback. It should be priced around $30,000, which is not too much more than the Acura ILX. 1.5-liter turbocharged engine, six-speed manual transmission. Very, very cool stuff.
Yeah.
So the original Integra, in case you're wondering, I think it was 1986 through 2006. It was available, and it's always been kind of an affordable budget sports car. But it's usually a two-door
vehicle. Hatchback. Yeah.
Although I think in the U.S. you could get it with the four-door.
So when your mom had it, what Integra brought to the table was an affordable, sporty car with great reliability. And so it was the kind of car where if you were, let's say if you were starting out, which is what your mom and I were doing at that time, right? It was, I think she paid like $14,000 for it, and they threw in, this is hilarious, Tommy, they threw in one of those like purse phones.
Okay.
To get her to buy the car. Those were the days. Mobile phone I'm talking about, right? Where they didn't have quite the little small mobile phones, but it was like in a purse, in a bag phone to buy it. And I think it was $14,000, and it was a car, like you could drive to work. It was a manual, which is what I love about your mom. She drives a manual. More than that, but obviously that was one of the things that always was wonderful. You could drive it to work. You could drive it on a road trip. We ended up selling that to some of our friends, and they just drove it into the ground. And the thing worked, and it was fun to drive. Not overly powerful, but nevertheless, a hoot and a good, reliable, interestingly styled, fun car. And hopefully this will have the same traits.
One, for folks saying that it's not quick enough or it's not fast enough, I would say stay tuned, because we may see some performance versions, like maybe a GSR, which is kind of a throwback to older Integras back in the day. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was like a Type R version or a GSR version or something a little bit more spicy than the current model. So don't discount it just yet for being a non-performer, because that may be coming.
And while we're on Acura, we're going to drive this car next. Of course, the new SI is coming. I think who's going out there? Is Nathan going to drive that next week?
I do believe so.
So what about that?
The new Civic Si is...
Which also comes in a manual. Wahoo!
Wahoo! Yes, is... I think it's not a particularly attractive car, to be honest with you. I don't
really
think that the redesign has done it any favors, but... I don't have a lot of really great things to say about the new SI. The interior is beautiful. I think they did a really good job with the interior. The issue, though, is that the price is increasing on the SI. So you used to be able to get it for like low 20s. Now we're looking at high 20s. And then when you're looking at high 20s, you're like borderline Golf GTI territory. You're maybe even borderline WRX territory. And I'm not sure that the SI has the performance or the chops to compete with those vehicles.
Yeah, usually the car in the middle is the one that people buy, right? So if you have like three different model lines up, it's the one in the middle that becomes the most popular. And you'd think with the SI being in the middle, it would be the most popular. So obviously you've got the Civic Turbo that lives underneath it, and you got the Type R that lives above it. So it kind of is in the middle. Is it only stick shift as well, again?
I don't know, Dad. I have to look it up.
I think it's only stick, which is hooray for Honda, but that's a really tough headwind to sell into if you're only doing it as a stick shift.
Yeah, it is cool, though, as an enthusiast. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. But once again, only stick shift, where something like, I don't know, it's in the single digits now as to how many manuals are sold. And with electrification, that's going to get worse.
200 horsepower, though. That's good.
Yeah.
And it's a very good six-speed manual if it's like the old one. The old one was excellent.
The old one had that issue with the rev hang, unfortunately.
That's right. That's a good point.
Where basically rev hang is where you shift, let's say, from first to second, and then while you're trying to put it into second, the rev does not decay. It doesn't go down. And right. So it doesn't make for a seamless shift. It's kind of weird. It's like...
It does have a helical limited slip diff, though, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of real performance, and it's... I don't want to make it sound like it's gotten hugely more expensive. I think it has like a $2,000 price increase or something. But you're inching up toward like base GTI territory, which has significantly more power. We're talking, some 40 plus more horsepower out of a 2-liter turbo instead of a 1.5. I think the sweet spot in the Civic lineup has always been the Civic Sport, not necessarily the SI, but Nathan's going to go drive this soon. He'll let us know what it's like. And I mean, there's a lot of attractive stuff, like it's got Honda Sensing Standard, which is their safety suite. That's always a good thing. The new interior looks really good. We just have to get behind the wheel and see what it's like to drive.
All right, let's switch gears and let's talk about some kind of big old trucky vehicles that are coming. Now, we're not talking about trucks. We'll leave that to Andre over at Talking Trucks. But there are a couple that actually are coming that I think I'm pretty excited about. And one I'm driving next week, and that's, of course, the new Range Rover. I think I'm driving it, or is it just being unveiled? I don't know.
I think it's just being unveiled.
All right, I'm going to get hands-on with it. How's that?
Right. Yeah, the new Range Rover. So it's a full-size Range Rover. These only come out like once every decade or so.
Exactly right.
It's got a straight six turbo engine, or it's got a new engine, which is manufactured by BMW. So it's got a BMW Heart V6 The overall design is almost identical to the old one. You really have to know your Range Rovers to know the difference. Or you look at the back and you see this kind of artistic floating design with these beautifully integrated taillights. The interior is updated as well with some new technology, some new materials, some new design. But they really didn't mess with the overall design language of the Range Rover. I think they were certainly more evolution rather than revolution.
Yeah, you know, in the UK, when they unveiled it, they had the old one next to the new one. And when the two are next to each other, you can really tell the differences.
Oh, yeah?
But without them being next to each other, it does look very similar to the old one. And, you know, Jerry McGovern, who does a lot of the styling over at Range Rover and Land Rover, has this very, I would call it, aero design language. Everything looks kind of like a very modern, very chic, very modern, very stylish, like a, you know, like a tailored suit. Design it gets a little bit old for me. So, like, if I compare a Range Rover to an Evoque to a Velar, they're all kind of almost like too aero, right? They all look like a bar of soap now, a stylish bar of soap, but nevertheless a bar of soap. I think that's why the Defender, from a style perspective, was such a huge hit, because it just broke that mold, right? It wasn't that, like, swept back. It didn't look like it was designed in a very chic wind tunnel. And so that's my only criticism of it. It's also coming out as a hybrid, as a PHEV, right? As a eventually there'll be an electrified version of it in 4 years, they're saying, but there's also a plug-in hybrid version, which I think it's actually pretty good mileage. I want to see something like 60 miles of range out of the battery.
There's also, I think, going to be a full battery electric at some point as well.
Yeah, there is, 4 years.
The interior looks really, really nice. They did a really nice job with updating it. It's very minimalist, a lot of kind of swoopy materials. It's got an extremely large sensor-mounted display. So if you are excited about the ultimate in luxury British off-roadiness, then definitely keep an eye out for the new 2022 Range Rover.
You know, it's got two antennas.
Two antennas?
Yeah. You know why?
Why does it have two?
Because, like, in the current Defender, if you want to update the operating system, you can't be doing anything else. So in the new Range Rover, apparently they put two antennas so you could update it while you're still using the infotainment system.
I think, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're going to sell the old and the new together for the 2022 model year.
That's another one where the price is probably more elastic, right? Especially the Autobiography version. And it's funny because, you know, in America, we've always had three-row big SUVs, but in Europe, it's been something that people have not had. Because, you know, the roads are much smaller. But once again, like, you know, we're stealing or we're borrowing Europeans, like, coffee and bread, because we used to only have white and rye bread. Now we've got all those artisanal breads. And they're borrowing, like, our three-row big-ass trucks. And speaking of a three-row big-ass truck, the other one that we don't know much about but definitely is coming is a new Sequoia. And we know that because there's a new Tundra.
So before we move on, pricing-wise, $104 starting for the new Range Rover, and then the first edition long wheelbase starts at $163.
Yeah, I think that's a three-row.
Right.
Like, that's the one.
Well, so what they're doing, though, so there's two- and three-row. You can get the long wheelbase in either three-row or two-row. So I think that the most expensive ones are long wheelbase but two-row, so you have the huge back seat. Mm-hmm. So I believe that that's their game plan on that.
Anyway, like I said, let's talk about the Sequoia.
Yes, we know almost nothing except what we know from the new Tundra.
Which is that, you know, there is a new twin-turbo V6 that produces in the Tundra, at least, just around 400 horsepower, and that there's also a hybrid version coming with a pretty small battery. It's a 1.5 kilowatt-hour battery. And so I suspect, because in the past, of course, Toyota shares platforms. So, you know, the platform that the Tundra is built on is also the platform that the Sequoia is built on, and also that the Toyota Land Cruiser is built on. No?
No, not historically.
Well, recently. And they let's just not get into the weeds. I know you're going to
make some Land Cruiser people very upset by saying that.
The powertrains are identical, the same.
Yes.
The same powertrain, all of them, basically.
Yep.
And of course, the Lexus LX.
Right. That Lexus LX and the Land Cruiser are the same.
Yeah. Same powertrain.
Land Cruiser people get picky when you say it's based on a Tundra, because they're like, well, if you look at the frame and the suspension.
They don't want it to be based
on
a Tundra.
Well, it isn't, though. It's quite different. It is quite a different beast underneath. But certainly the Tundra and the Sequoia have been blood sisters for a long time.
Yeah, so we're expecting a new Sequoia to come out. And let's face it, the current one is pretty old, with GM, you know, having recently updated the Tahoe and the Yukon. You know, that's the world that we're – and the new, there's a new Armada. There's got to be a new version of the Sequoia because – you know, when it first came out, people loved it. But I recently took it off road, and it's very good. But it's really starting to show its age.
Right. You're 1,000% right. The Sequoia has always been like kind of the affordable Toyota if you want three rows.
Exactly.
Quote affordable. But the 5.7 is ancient, and it's very, very thirsty.
It's incredibly thirsty, and you know, with gas prices now almost reaching all-time highs in America, that's going to be very hard sell. So I say, you know, a hybrid. The sooner the better.
There's only been two generations since 2000, by the way, of Sequoia.
Really?
Oh, yes. So the third gen, I think you're spot on. It's going to be twin turbo hybrid. It's probably going to have a very similar look in the front to the Tundra. I imagine that maybe they might share a similar front end as previous Sequoias have done. I imagine the interiors are probably going to be fairly similar. It's probably going to have a four-wheel drive system with perhaps a low range, although maybe not the same capability as a TRD Pro. It's probably going to tow a huge amount. It's probably going to weigh a huge amount. And if you are looking for the ultimate American-built, I think it's going to be built in the U.S., right?
Yes.
American-built three-row. Made by Toyota, then the Sequoia is the one for you.
All right, let's keep going. Another new one, which we're never going to get to drive because we've been blacklisted by Subaru, is the WRX. I'm very excited. I would love to get behind the wheel. Same thing with the new Forester. I would love to get behind the wheel of that, but alas, you're going to have to go to places like Alex on Auto or Redline Reviews for those reviews because got blacklisted by them. What are you going to do?
There's also a new model called the Solterra, which is the full electric vehicle made by Subaru, also made by Toyota. So the two have come together once again, like they did with the 86 and the BRZ, to build a new car, ground-up new car, with a fully electric drivetrain and a very interesting style. So while we may not have the opportunity to drive the Solterra, we probably will get the chance to drive the Toyota version called the BZ4X,
Just call it the BZ.
B4XZX.
No, it's BZ4. Just call it the BZ.
Yeah, that's like a CAPTCHA-solve code on a website.
And you're going to be there next week, or when you're listening to this today, actually for the American kind of, I guess, unveiling of the BZ or whatever.
The world debut of the BZ. Well, so the Japanese model's already been revealed.
Yeah, I saw it on a plane when I was.
But the American debut of the BZ4X. It's supposed to have a long range battery with range maybe in the 300 mile.
And a steering wheel instead of a yoke.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't have the yoke. The concept car had the yoke, which was not much liked or appreciated. So, very kind of excited about the BZ. I need to see it in person because in pictures it kind of looks like a doorstop. But hopefully once we have the chance to kind of get hands-on with it.
We just did a video where we compared it to the Solterra. And outside of the nose clip and the rear end, they're almost identical. And then somebody in the comments I was reading this morning said one of the reasons for that might be because apparently Toyota owns 20% of Subaru, so that's why they're working together. Because I asked a question, why doesn't Toyota just develop their own? Why are they working with Subaru? And that would be a very good answer to that question.
Because they've done it like we talked about with the BRZ FRS right. 86 kind of ordeal.
Yeah, but then you got the Supra, which certainly Toyota does not own any percentage of BMW.
Not that we know of.
Not unless there's some secret agreement that we don't know about. All right, shall we keep going?
Yeah, let's talk about the new Corvette, the Z06.
Yeah, Z06. That's going to be mind-blowingly quick.
So this is the C8 generation of the Z06. And unlike previous generations that have used a supercharged power plant, the 2023 Corvette Z06 is naturally aspirated. It's got, I think, the highest red line in Chevrolet history, 8,600 RPM, which is 2,000 RPM higher than the Stingray, 670 horsepower. Very cool. 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds is what they were saying. You can get it with your favorite Brembo carbon ceramic brakes and slightly more aggressive exterior design, slightly different interior design. This is going to be one to look out for on the racetracks.
Yeah, I think Corvette finally, with the latest generation, is getting some respect as a sports car. It's always been highly sought after and highly respected in America, but the Europeans have loved to poo-poo it because the interiors are always just a little bit below what they're used to. But now with this newest generation, not only is it world-class interior, but it's also world-class sports car, mid-engine mounted, and finally
flat plane V8.
Yeah, finally the Europeans are like, oh, maybe this thing is real, which it always has been, but maybe now they're starting to
get some respect.
Yeah. Should we do a couple more?
Yeah, let's keep going.
And if we've forgotten some, which we probably have, because we're kind of doing this off the top of our heads based on all the cars that we've recently seen. The two Mercedes that I'm the most excited about, and one's supposed to be out now, but I'm not sure it's out now. Let's talk about that one. You actually drove it, the EQS, the electric S-Class.
It does look like a computer mouse, but the EQS is one of the greatest cars I've ever driven.
Really?
Truly phenomenal. Yes, it is the electric S-Class is kind of the way to look at it, even though it's not related to the gasoline S-Class at all. But this is the future of Mercedes-Benz. It is simply the quietest car I've ever driven, one of the softest sprung, one of the most elegantly designed, and it's got 54 inches of screen on the interior. So the whole interior is basically
What's that screen called? Like ultra screen?
Hyper screen,
that's
yes.
Right. What? How quick is it?
Very. I think it's like mid-fours for the 580, if I remember right.
So it's kind of weird because right now we've got the current new S-Class sitting in our parking lot. I've been driving it a week and loving it. Except for one thing, this little weird thing that keeps popping up telling me to adjust the steering wheel in the seat, which we still haven't figured out why he keeps doing it. It's annoying. But beyond that, the thing is phenomenal. All-wheel drive, $140,000 tour de force of pure luxury.
Oh, sorry, I think it's low four. So there's two, if I remember correctly. So there is the 450, which is rear-wheel drive, and then the 580, which is all-wheel drive, and dual motor in the all-wheel drive. The S-Class that we have outside is just phenomenal for a tour de force of luxury and tech. But take that and magnify it by 3x and you've got the EQS. It really is that crazy.
Which is weird because now they have two top-of-the-line sedans, right?
Yep, they
There's
do.
There's an electric one and the V8 twin turbo. I'm curious to see, what the take rate will be on either of those. That'll be a good indication of whether people think the world is ready for electrification.
The EQS also isn't a sedan, even though it looks like one. It's actually a giant hatchback.
One of those.
It's
okay.
Not an attractive vehicle from the outside. Although it does have a ton of road presence when you drive it around, people just stare at you.
Yeah.
But on the interior, it's incredible. It's from an engineering standpoint, it is just miles ahead of most cars on the road. It really is a thing of magnificence.
You think it's better than a Tesla Model S?
I do. Yep, I do. I think it's better made. It's got four-wheel steering. It is. It's expensive. We're talking, like 100 grand territory. But it is just phenomenal to drive around in, to experience all the tech, to experience the quality. It really is that good.
Now, the one that I'm going to be driving next week, which December. Sorry, I'm going to be driving it in December, not next week, which I'm super excited about, is a new SL. And they've gone back to, and this is all I know about it, Tommy, they've gone back to a soft top instead of a hard top.
I heard that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So the people I've talked to have driven it.
Those come around like once every 15 years.
Yeah.
Those are even more unusual.
SL, of course, is the one that everybody thinks of is the Gullwing, right? And then the Pagoda came around, but these are the classic two-door Mercedes, grand touring sports cars. And so when a new SL comes around, it's a big deal, and I'm really stoked to drive it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it'll be really fun. And there's a whole bunch of new Porsches coming out that I'll be driving right after that. New variations of the Taycan. We're guessing, we don't know yet. We're just talking about this. We're guessing there's probably a crossover version coming, right? Because the current one is a sedan and the Cross Turismo is basically a station wagon.
Yeah.
So the next, it would make sense for them to do a SUV next, right?
I think that makes a ton of sense.
And then there's like three models of, at least the reporting has been, that there are three models of 911 coming, three special models. The word is that this might be the last 911 that is gas, so they're going to harken back. There's like a 50-year anniversary 911 coming. But that's really inside baseball, so you got to live and breathe Porsche, I think, to be super excited by that. So, we kind of tend to go more in the mainstream. But anyway, just wanted to mention those as well. What other cars are we forgetting, Tommy?
Speaking of mainstream, the new Hummer EV.
Yeah, the Hummer truck and, of course, the SUV. I got to drive the Hummer truck. Crazy, super excited, with that one, probably one of the most phenomenal new vehicles I've I've gotten to drive, and you know, the first 1,000 or so are going to be the truck, but eventually the SUV's coming. It's got, what, 1,150 pound-foot of torque?
Yeah, some stupid number. It's crazy.
Yeah, like 1,000 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, 16 inches of ground clearance. It is a tour de force of battery off-road vehicle or truck, and no spare tire.
Ah!
Which is kind of which is kind of crazy for an off-roader, but I guess, you know, if the battery is 200 kilowatt hours, which we're guessing at, right, then there's not a lot of room for a spare tire. The number, it has not been confirmed, but this is a mind-blowing number. 9,000 pounds, Tommy.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be crazy.
Of electric truck.
Yeah, that is a serious amount of weight. I'm excited about the Hummer. I think it's cool. I'm really excited about hopefully the electric Silverado. Now, we don't know anything about that, but the Hummer is just, it's kind of out of the price range of the vast majority of Americans. So I'm hoping that the Silverado is going to be the one that's more affordable.
And let's wrap this up on another two electric vehicles that we'll be driving soon as well, and I think already out in Europe. So the Hyundai and the Kia, right? The EV6 and the IONIQ 5. Both of those look like they're actually taking it to Tesla. I've gotten to sit in both of them, and the design language is really unique and interesting. Mm. There'll be all-wheel drive versions. Finally, I think we're going to have a vehicle that is a ground-up electric car. That isn't like Hyundai's take on, let's call it a Model Y. It's like its own take, right? Because the wheelbase is super long. The vehicle is super wide. There's a lot of interesting tech, including like the ability to not plug your house into it, but certainly to plug two 120 volt outlets into it.
I think it's
a little
great
adapter. It's pretty cool.
Yep. So that's really cool. We also have the Lightning, the F-150 Lightning coming.
That's a truck. We'll leave that to Andre.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, the IONIQ, I think, is going to be a really incredible car. They've upped the design, they've upped the technology, and they are really, like you said, bringing it to Tesla. I think that's a great way of looking at it. So can't wait to get behind the wheel of those models.
And we can't forget about what Paul's driving next week.
Which is the Kona EV and the Elantra, no, Kona N and the Elantra N.
Yeah, exactly. So he's going to be driving, you know, the sporty versions of the Konas, and with the Veloster N, and with Albert Biermann, and with Peter Schreier. Basically, Hyundai and Kia have taken the sports car hot hatch to the Germans, right?
Right.
Because they've taken the M tuning from BMW M series and the design language of Audi, and have combined them into a car that is just as compelling to drive as any AMG or M version or hot hatch or Golf R or GTI. So I drove the Kona N. I'm not sure if the driving impressions were embargoed or not. So I don't want to, you know, cross any lines. We value that partnership. What I can tell you, which isn't embargoed, is the coolest thing on that car. It's got a little like overboost button. So you can push it, and then
Engren shift.
Yeah, and Engren shift, and for like, I don't know, 10 seconds, and it counts it down. It's like having nitrous, right? You get like 15 more horsepower.
It's cool. It's
like a video game, right? It's anytime you can take a video game car and make it real, I think you've got a winning formula.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's a really fun thing.
All right, well, there you have it, guys. The cars, I'm sure we've forgotten a bunch, but those are the cars that we're certainly looking forward to in 2022, and are worth the wait if you're out there holding on. If hopefully things return back to normal and these cars are not unobtainium and the manufacturers can actually build them and the dealers actually sell them at the MSRP, then we're in for a great 2022. Once again, if you're looking to check out all of our content, go to tfl-studios.com, download it to your phone like I did. Anything else, Tommy?
I think you nailed it. We got it all.
Oh, there you go. It's going to be a big week. Lots of videos at TFL since when you're listening to this. All of us are in or about LA driving all these cool new cars. Stay tuned to either TFL Car, TFL Now, TFL Truck for a lot of interesting car content and videos. And we're going to have a lot to talk about next time, Tommy.
We'll see you in the next episode.
Ciao.
C say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.